God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things. This is Brother Hutchings inviting the listeners to another Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. And here now is Brother Jerry.
Thanks, Brother Hutchings. This is day two in a three-part series with Bill Federer on his newest book and DVD set, both entitled Change to Chains. Brother Bill is president of Amerisearch Incorporated. He also produces a 60-second radio feature heard on a number of stations nationwide called American Minute. He's an author, historian, and much sought-after speaker. Brother Hutchings, what is Chains to Chains about?
Thank you, Brother Jerry. The story here is going all the way back to Nimrod, down to our own present form of government here in the United States. People often vote for change, but the change they get is a different kind of change than they anticipated. Often they end up in chains. I've been to China many times, to Russia many times, to Cuba, Mongolia. You see people still in chains or coming out of a period of extreme persecution. And what has happened when people think they are voting or putting leaders in who are for the people? I've been in China a couple of times and been in a court there to face a judge. And they will often read the government of the People's Republic of China. It's like the People's Republic. No, it's not the People's Republic. But in any event, this is a fascinating story of history and the mistakes that people make. Brother Bill, is it true that a benevolent dictator is always the best form of government?
No, unless Jesus is the king, and then it is. But other than that, every human being has a fallen human nature, and it's selfish and wants to compile that. And this is the dilemma that America's founders had. There was a famous quote from James Madison in Federalist Paper number 51, and he said that the dilemma that we face is that people have to give up enough power to create the government and then retain enough power to control the government. So the premise, the number one understanding is that ever since the fall in the Garden of Eden, mankind has this selfish nature. And if somebody on the street yields to this selfish nature and breaks into your house and wants to rob and steal and kill you, well, in that case, you need to give up a little bit of your freedom to the government so they can create a police force that they can keep this criminal from breaking into your house. But if individuals on the street can yield to their fallen nature and want to steal from you, what happens when somebody that is in the government yields to their fallen nature and wants to use the power of the government to break into your house and to steal from you? In that case, the people need to retain enough power to control the government. And so that was the balancing act that the founding fathers had to face. Give up enough power to create this government, retain enough power to control the government. Thomas Jefferson said, we have the wolf by the ears. We can't hold on to it, and we can't let it go. Washington said, government is fire. It's a dangerous servant and a fearful master. And so we see that they were brilliant enough to know how to strike that balance. You have a spectrum. One side of the spectrum is a totalitarian dictator that controls every aspect of your life. And as you mentioned it, communism is really nothing more than monarchy, because every communist country has a communist dictator. And if you're a party member, you're the new royalty. And if you're just the common peasant, then you're the subject, you're the serf, and your fate's totally decided by the government. And so, and you think of the most communist country on earth, you know, probably is China or North Korea. And as you mentioned, what's the official name of North Korea? The Democratic People's Republic of North Korea. It's not democratic. The people have no say. It's not a republic. It is a dictatorship. And so you can't go by the names they give themselves. You go by the actual effect it has on the people. But it's a spectrum. One side of the spectrum is total concentrated power. The other side of the spectrum is no government. It's called anarchy. And everybody is their own king. everybody's a king unto themselves. Well, in America, because we had individual morals and we have had Christian population that believed, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, and there's a God in heaven looking over our shoulders that wants us to treat others as we would be treated, we were closer to the we're able to move closer to the anarchy part of the spectrum, because we can keep order individually without a strong king, because we have these Judeo-Christian values. Now, as we get rid of our Christian values and we tell people, give in to your lusts and your passions and all kinds of immorality, well, more crime takes place, and we have to relinquish more power to the government so they can maintain order. So the less Christian we are, the more we're going to move back in that totalitarian direction. Ronald Reagan gave a great quote in 1961. He said, in this great country of ours took place the greatest revolution that has ever taken place in the world's history. Every other revolution simply exchanged one set of rulers for another. So you get rid of one king, you get another one. You know, you get a good king, he dies, his son takes over, he's a bad king. You know, you just swap out one for the other. In America, we got rid of the king altogether, and we made the people the king. Ronald Reagan continued, here, for the first time in all the thousands of years of man's relation to man, the Founding Fathers established the idea that you and I had within ourselves the God-given right and ability to determine our own destiny. And so we get to decide who we're going to marry, where we're going to live, and what job we're going to have. You know, I tell kids in school, I said, you know, you struggle to think, well, what am I going to do with my life? I said, that's a struggle, but it's a luxury that most people throughout history and around the world don't have. In Europe, by the time you're you know, 10 years old, your teachers have decided if your grades are good enough for you to go on in school. If you are a Christian and you live in Egypt, you're a dhimmi, and you can't hold a job higher than a Muslim. If you're a Dalit, if you're in the untouchable caste in India, you have to clean the toilets and take care of the garbage and live outside of town. Your faith is determined. I was even reading about Queen Isabella of Spain. By the time she was 6 years old, she was already betrothed to be married. Her uncle, you know, had betrothed her, and then that guy died, and he betrothed her to somebody else, and here she is a princess, and she could not even decide who she was going to marry. And so in America, where you get to decide your future, your fate, you work hard, you give yourself an education, and with the like Reagan said, the God-given right and ability to determine our own destiny. So something unique happened in America. Now, the default setting for human government is monarchy. So like a stretch of rubber band, and you let go of it, it snaps back. So power always wants to go back into the hands of one person. And again, every playground has a bully. And so you look at history, and there's different eras. There's what's called prehistory, which is about 4,000 to 3,000 B.C., which was pre-flood. After that, when the flood happened, you see that civilization begins. If Noah got off the ark at Mount Ararat, came down that Mesopotamian valley and began to restart the cities, and that's where civilization begins. It's called the Bronze Age. That's because they begin to make farming tools and weapons out of bronze. And then there's what's called Ancient Antiquity from 1200 to 600 B.C., then Classical Antiquity with the Greeks and the Romans from 600 to 27 B.C., the Roman Empire from 27 to 476, then the Middle Ages and Islam up to about 1300, then the Renaissance up to about 1500, then the Age of Discovery up to 1700, and then the Early Modern and Industrial Revolution, which is about, you know, the 1900 to the present. But that's world history. So it doesn't go back millions and millions of years. It only goes back about 6,000. And the first empire, according to the Bible, was Nimrod. And the builder of ziggurats and the Tower of Babel and the languages got confused and spread. And lo and behold, over in that area of the world, you see that there are these structures that look like ziggurats and look like the power was getting stronger. So they had cities, but it was Nimrod that ruled them all. Now, some Jewish commentaries think that Sargon of Akkadia was Nimrod. He lived around the same time period, and Sargon was the first one to conquer all the way from the Persian Gulf to the Mediterranean Sea. And Sargon of Akkadia, he made Akkadian the first lingua franca, you know, the first language. And so that was around 2250 B.C. Then we have the Egyptian pyramids about 2400 B.C. They begin to appear on the scene. And then in India, on the Ganges River, the Indus Rivers, you begin to see civilizations. Now, they have hieroglyphic little markings, but nobody knows what they mean because it's been destroyed. There was a story when the British had conquered India and they were building a train and they needed stones to go under the railroad tracks. And they said, oh, well, there's this old ruins of a city, this Harappan city. And so the British dismantled this 2,000-year-old city and used the stones for the railroads. So we don't have the records there for India, but about 1800 B.C. was when they began to have their first civilizations. China, about 1800 B.C., they began to have their first civilizations. And China's unique. Almost from the beginning, they had a totalitarian dictator. They had an emperor. And the idea was that you serve the emperor. So the people over there are more or less used to having this state determine their life. And so China, almost from its beginning till now, has always been very strongly controlled by the government. 1750 B.C. was Hammurabi there in the Babylonian Empire. And then around 1600 B.C. is when the children of Israel went into Egypt, and then after a couple hundred years came back, and archaeologists always argue over the dates. But then there's the Greeks with the Battle of Troy. And then you can skip all the way over the world to Mexico. It was called the Olmec Civilization, about 1200 B.C. And they, lo and behold, have monarchs. But the first real instance in history of a people, a nation, being ruled without a king is Israel. Lo and behold, children of Israel leave Pharaoh, they leave Egypt, and they come to the Promised Land, and they don't have a king. Anybody from any tribe can be chosen by God to rise up and be the king. It was decentralized. It looked from the natural a little bit disorganized, but it worked, and the people had maximum freedom. And But again, they came to Samuel, and they said, well, we don't like this. We want to be like all the other countries. We want a king. And Samuel said, you're not going to like it, but here's Saul, and he's going to take your sons and your daughters and your best land. And the people said, we don't care. We want him. So we go through history. We see that 6,000 years of it. We see that the typical form of government is a monarchy. And we're moving back in that direction today, by the way. You know, the patronage system, if you're friends with the king, you're more equal. If you're not friends with the king, you're less equal. If you're an enemy of the king, you're dead. It's called treason. Well, today, if you're a friend of the president, you get an Obamacare waiver. If you're not friends with the president, you get your car dealership shut down. And if you're an enemy of the president, you get character assassinated in the media, you know? And so it's moving back. An interesting thing, Noah, is that the first record of private ownership of land was Israel. Here's Richard Pipes. He writes in a book, Communism of History. He said, in the oldest civilizations, dating back 5,000 years, Pharaonic Egypt, that's Egypt ruled by the pharaohs, Pharaonic Egypt and Mesopotamia, agricultural land always belonged to the palaces, to the temples. But in ancient Israel is the first country where we possess firm evidence of private land ownership. It was that verse that says, don't move the ancient landmark between people's properties. And so here, you know, in Sumeria, they've uncovered caches of these cuneiform tablets, and the king would decide what's going to be grown on the field, how much it was grown, what was the tally of this, and it was socialized farming. I mean, in Hammurabi's code, they had the price a physician could charge for setting a broken leg. It was socialized medicine, even back then. But Israel was the first instance of private land ownership. And it's sort of interesting, though, that Karl Marx comes along and said that communism can be summed up in one sentence: the elimination of private property. And so what happens if you own private property? you can accumulate wealth, you can challenge the power of a dictator, and you can be a lender. And so that, in the Bible, is called being blessed. That when you can no longer own property, then you become a debtor, and you're under the curse. One of the interesting stories in the book of Judges is Abimelech. Chapter 9 was the illegitimate son of Gideon. And he went to Shechem and got money from the treasury, the pagan temple treasury there, and he used the money to buy what he called vain and light persons to follow him to the house of Oprah where Gideon's family was, and he slew all of his 70 half-brothers, and then the people of Shechem made Abimelech king. And so we see that Abimelech robbed the public treasury to buy vain supporters to make him a king. So again, this is very similar to where in Rome, Julius Caesar robbed the temple treasury, the temple of Saturn, took the money to buy supporters, and so he could make himself a dictator for life. And so we see that today, the using of the federal funds to buy, you know, Acorn and SEIU supporters so that you can help win the next election. It's a fascinating study as I go through the Greeks. Alexander the Great had the largest empire in the world, died when he was 32 years old in a drunken stupor. Then there's Assyria for a while had the largest empire in the world, Nebuchadnezzar, and then the Persians, what is today Iran. It had the largest empire in the world, the Achaemenid Persian Empire. And but then Athens comes along. It's one of those attempts to have a government without a king. Athens, an interesting person that lived in Athens was Plato. Not the stuff kids play with, but this is Plato. He was a philosopher. And he saw the democracy, and he considered it chaos, everybody having a say in everything. And he saw how they could turn into a mob, a mobocracy, and they had an admiral killed because he didn't rescue people who had been lost at sea, and the people later felt bad about killing this admiral. So Plato disliked democracy, and Plato came up with five steps that civilization goes through. The first step was called aristocracy. This was rule by those who are capable. They know how to run businesses and farms, and they know how to run governments, so an aristocracy. Second is followed by lovers of fame. These are people that say, hey, I want to be one of those guys that's up in front and gets all the attention. And so this is sort of like, I hate to use the analogy, sort of like an Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, what did he do before being governor of the ninth largest economy in the world, you know, the state of California? You know, had he run a city or anything? No, he was just in front of people. And so this was people that were not capable, but they got elected. So this is aristocracy to a timocracy. Now, these people that are lovers of fame, they don't know how to run things. So what do? They vote themselves favors. And this starts a clique called an oligarchy. And so these are people that rule for themselves. And then the mass of people that don't get the favors, they begin to clamor, and they finally get control, and then it's called a democracy. And what do? When the democracy takes over, they vote themselves favors. So they raid the treasury and vote the money for themselves, and then it begins to crumble. And Plato said, democracy without virtue ends in chaos, out of which a tyrant arises. So we see we go from aristocracy to timocracy, lovers of fame, oligarchy ruled by few, democracy ruled by the people. But if the people don't have virtue and they yield to that same selfish fallen nature that everybody has, then it turns into chaos, and out of the chaos rises a tyrant, a dictator. And this is interesting. It continues today. One example of not too far back in history was France. France had King Louis the 16th. He was the nice guy that sent ships to help us get our independence from England. And he let the people have freedom of speech, and they spoke out against him. And they had a couple years of bad crops in France. And so the people clamored, and they said, you know, if we can just chop off the king's head, all of our problems will be solved. So they chop off the king's head. The problems are not solved. So they said, if we could just chop off all the royalties' heads, our problems will be solved. So they bring them all into Paris, chop off their heads. Well, their problems are not solved. Then they say there's all these rich people. If we can just chop off the rich people's heads, our problems will be solved. They bring them into Paris, chop off their heads, and their problems were still there. Then they said it's these shopkeepers, these farmers, they're hoarding the grain. They're the ones that are holding us back from this new perfect society utopia. So they bring them into Paris and chop off their heads, and their situation still doesn't turn around. And then they said, well, you know, it must be those people that are disloyal to the revolution, the ones that used to chop off heads, but now they're tired of it. So they bring them into the streets of Paris and chop off their heads, and it still doesn't turn around. And then out of this chaos rises a tyrant, Napoleon. And he takes over as a dictator. And so you sort of go full circle. And out of democracy, right, without self-control, ends in this chaos. And out of that chaos rises a tyrant.
Thank you, Brother Bill. And I'm anxious to hear your third message on this subject tomorrow to see if our own country might not be ready for a king. Of course, we're not advocating that, but we seem to be going in that direction. But you'll be listening tomorrow. This is a fascinating series, and the book is a tremendous course in history, From Change to Change. How people always want change, but usually end up in change. And I've watched the DVD set. It's a fabulous presentation. I enjoyed it thoroughly, and I know you will too. And I learned a lot and had a new, look at history that I had not thought about before. But we can probably anticipate what is going to happen in our own country by reading this book and also watching the 3-DVD set. But here now is Jerry to tell you how you can get either the book or the DVD set. And remember, those in the Detroit area, that Dr. Federer will be with us speaking at our meeting in Detroit on September the 10th.
Thanks, Brother Hutchings. To get them, call 1-800-652-1144. Write to Southwest Radio Ministries, Post Office Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma, 73008. Or go online. Our website address is swrc.com. The 3-DVD set is offered for a gift of $20 in the United States, $21 in Canada. A 300-page book will be sent in appreciation of a $20 contribution in the U.S., $22 in Canada. Better yet, get the book and DVD set together for an offering of $35 in the U.S., $38 in Canada. They are titled the same, and they have basically the same information in them. The subtitle of both is The 6,000-Year Quest for Control. Brother Bill takes you from Nimrod to Nebuchadnezzar to Herod to Napoleon to Hitler and finally to our current President of the United States, Barack Obama. Again, to get any or all these tremendous resources, call 1-800-652-1144. Write to Southwest Radio, Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma, 73008. The website is at swrc.com. Remember, too, that Brother Bill is a featured speaker at our conference in the Detroit area this coming Saturday, September 10th. Call for details and to pre-register. Stay tuned now for a Bible in the News report over most of these stations. Brother Hutchings and Brother Bill conclude the series on tomorrow's Your Watchman on the Wall program. Don't miss it. Welcome to today's Bible in the News report, a feature of your Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. We report on a recent news story and relate it to the Bible. Today's speaker is Dr. Bob Glaze.
The United Nations continues to pursue a course to disarm the world to make it easier to control. This is being done under the guise of protecting the weak and innocent. However, as the citizens of Great Britain just experienced, is that they were left completely unprotected. In an article published on August 16, 2011, the NRA had this to say about police protection in the advent of a ban on small arms in Britain. Imagine roving gangs terrorizing your neighborhood, rioting, setting fire to homes and businesses, and beating and robbing your neighbors. The government is helpless to protect you. Your family looks to you to do something, but you can't protect them with a gun because guns are banned. All you have is a baseball bat. But do you know what really angers me? This is what the UN envisions for America. UN diplomats and anti-gunners here in the U.S. are pushing the lie that government will protect you. Protecting people is the job of the police. Unquote. Wayne LaPierre, executive vice president of the NRA, adds, tell that to the victims of Hurricane Katrina. In the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, local police in New Orleans illegally confiscated the guns of law-abiding residents, putting them at the mercy of rampaging mobs. Unquote. In a related article found at Forbes.com, dated 6-7-2011, entitled, UN Agreement Should Have All Gun Owners Up in Arms, what happens is described. Quote, under the guise of a proposed global small arms treaty premised to fight terrorism, insurgency, and international crime syndicates, you can be quite certain that an even more insidious threat is being targeted. Our Constitution right for law-abiding citizens to own and bear arms, unquote. According to Forbes, the following will happen. The government will enact tougher licensing requirements, creating additional bureaucratic red tape for legal firearms ownership, confiscate and destroy all unauthorized civilian firearms, ban the trade, sale, and private ownership of all semi-automatic weapons or any that have magazines, create an international gun registry, clearly setting the stage for full-scale gun confiscation. In short, overriding our national sovereignty and in the process providing license for the federal government to assert preemptive powers over state regulatory powers guaranteed by the 10th Amendment in addition to our Second Amendment rights. The Bible clearly gives a person the right to protect himself and those under his care. In Luke 22:36-38, Jesus gave his followers instructions that now that they would have to provide for themselves as well as protect themselves the right of self-protection. And he writes, and Jesus said, but now he that hath a purse, let him take it, and likewise his scrip. And he that hath no sword, let him sell his garment and buy one. And they said, Lord, behold, here are two swords. And he said unto them, it is enough. This was not a suggestion, but a command. Paul goes even further in 1 Timothy 4:8 concerning those who were under the care of family members, and he says, but if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. Again, providing protection for our families is not a suggestion. It is a command, and anything less, we will be responsible of sinning against our Lord.
That's today's Bible in the News report of Southwest Radio Ministries. Be here for our next Your Watchman on the Wall program and a Bible in the News report.